It looks like he's here, but he's not. He is such a master of disappearance that his vanishing act goes unnoticed at normal speed. Look at the crease in his brow, the tight mouth clenched. The magician begins in anger. As the camera pulls away, he covers up that feeling. The thing he can't say, even to himself. Here, Mark shows us his first and best disguise, the mask of happiness. When we met for the first time, he didn't say hi. He asked how he could help me. He never had his own room or car, office or telephone. And because he bought his clothes secondhand, even those didn't seem to belong to him. He was never alone, so he could develop the knack of knowing what you needed before you did. Instead of a private life, the invisible man dedicated himself to service. The armor, the shield he always carried in front of him, said, "You can't take something away from me. I never had."
Hope you liked the show, and if you want more shows, you know, I can totally find shows, and maybe find you like segments, and I could send them to you regularly, you know, and we could set something up with that. So if you like that, that'd be great. How about I talk to the mirror, and that'd be a bit easier. But, and so I think that's about it, and I hope you enjoy this show. And I hope you like the movies, and I hope you have a very nice holiday and stuff. At least, Mommy, you don't have to worry about us getting in your hair and having all these problems. I know you probably miss the problems now, but that's okay. And I hope you both have a nice time, okay? And I'm thinking of you, okay? I hope you like my hair, too. Okay, bye-bye.
Now, we would usually walk through this. We'd cut through the townhouses over here, and then we'd come through here and spit out onto Sunset.
Hi, my name is Andrew Vollmar, and I've been Mark's best friend since the age of 3. We grew up together in this building. And I still live here after about 34 years now in the same apartment. It's funny, we never really started out as friends. I was his bully or something. Somehow we always got in fights or something. I was picking on him or something. He just stopped dead in the tracks from running from me one day and said, why are you fighting me? And I didn't have an answer for him. I said, I don't know. And he says, well, you want to come to my place? And I am like, all right. You know, and before you know it, we were like, you know, peas and carrots.
Oh, God. swim. Okay, go.
I remember I went up to his place one day after he broke all his records. He had all his records and he whipped them. He just kept hitting them with his belt. And he had carved X's into his chest and he had cut marks up in his arms up here. What happened to Mark scares the hell out of me because I feel so responsible. That was my only job I had as a friend, was to be there for him then. And it wasn't. That's my biggest failure I've ever done. And I gotta carry that forever. You know, Mark lived a very bizarre life. I talked to him with friends that we had, and they all kind of really don't want to talk about that part much. I don't know if they just, if they're embarrassed about it, if they feel unsure about it. I don't care. I don't care what he wants to do. I don't care about his choices. I just wanted him there. He was everything to me.
When Mark died, he hadn't seen Andy in 10 years.
My name is Mira Soleil. And Mark and I, we met in 1997 at a place called Huzama. And we were partner, involved romantically, sexually, and also politically for 10 years up until his death in April 2007.
You look evil, like, just don't do that.
So he doesn't try to go around and whine about everything. He's with a transsexual woman and it's not a big deal. So, but what he does is behind the scene, he does tons of fucking work. He's been such a sweetheart and he's the one loading up. We're not rich. He earns very little money. I earn a tiny bit more because I'm a whore. But because he's such a stable boy, he succeeded in getting a gold card. So in order to produce this event, we load his credit card up to the top. And he just likes me and he thinks it's great work that we're doing as a community. So a big thank and Mark, come here and show your face.
Okay, bon. Mark, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Woo. Bon, that's okay. That's what I have to do. Bon, I'll probably make a mistake too, so I'm sure you will enjoy it and find it also experimental. It was planned. Whatever mistake I do was planned. Okay, one, two, one, two, three, four.
Mark rode his bicycle every day and all year round. When he'd come back home, whether at lunchtime or after work, he'd always ring his bell several times, which was his way of telling us, his family of dog, transsexual, and cats, all of us here who had been anxiously waiting for his return, that he was back. Mark liked to imitate Mick Jagger, but only behind closed curtains. Every so often, I'd catch him dancing and pretending to sing while listening to loud music. He'd be super embarrassed for about a second or two, and then... But his number one impersonation was Blondie. I actually have a video of him doing a pretty nasty Blondie at a fundraiser for our radio show, Animal Voices.
Now, here's our study.
Mark?
Yeah?
What are you doing there?
I'm just filming them a bunch of, like our apartment and some, images of... I'm just filming them images of the turtles and stuff like that. And I'm going to send it...
Is that too messy
around? What?
Is that too messy
around? No. We cleaned up a little while ago. Not too messy. Here's some of our books. Uh-oh. Transsexual books. Animal rights books. Really nice books. Very happy. How about one close-up of you two? Hey. Okay, so ready? It's recording now. That looks nice. Okay.
No, I'm not photogenic. Oh, no, I don't like my face there.
I think it looks super nice. Okay, so we'll take a few more.
Straight up, regular height now.
Oh. I got a very nice one.
You see?
So I'm going to go like this. You ready?
As long as you try to catch the boots.
Guys, out of the way.
Out of the way, guys!
No. Oh, it's okay. She gets to the bottom, she slaps Leda out of the way. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Do something with
my hands.
What did he say?
Why are you happy? Okay, I'll tell you. And I'll get all like mushy and stuff. Because this girl here does so much for it. And she makes me feel so happy. And I honestly, this has been the best birthday of my life. But the past birthday has been terrible. But now I just feel so good. She did so much. She did like basically this whole thing. Thank her so much. And I almost cried earlier. And not as emotional now, but I'm still a bit. And all that, but it was really nice of her to do all this. And I'm very, very sincerely thankful. And I love her so much. And we're going to do the things today.
The overall feeling that I'm trying to produce from that performance and that video is sort of a ritual, a healing ritual that I'm conducting for that kid who was me and who was hurt because of being effeminate, because of being girly, and because of being androgynous. So I use different things. I use five slides, five pictures of me as a kid who translate something very true and authentic about how I was then and how I was perceived. And I also use self-injury as a way to heal the pain that I carry now from when I was a kid and onward.
Candy. I've come to hate my body and all it requires in this world. Completely, what others so discreetly talk about. I'm gonna watch bluebirds fly over my shoulder.
We're going to be setting up. It's going to take a few minutes, so have a drink and chat with your neighbor.
This is a picture from Mark's archive. Three small boxes, mostly filled with videotapes and old Rolling Stones records, and this cast of his arm when he was 12 years old. On the underside, there is a single sentence hidden from view. The truth was the thing I invented so I could live. He asked many times if I'd like to borrow one of the tapes he'd collected about the animals he loved more than himself. And I always put him off, knowing I wouldn't be able to take the planned cruelties of factory farming. When I see them again, now, for the first time, I can't help wondering, why did he feel that these pictures were home?
Oh.
My name is Lauren Corman, and I worked with Mark on the Animal Voices radio show. Naj and I inherited the show from Mark and Mira Soleil, and I guess Mark did all the technical work for us for about 2 years, and that's when I really got to know him.
It's time for us to end this hierarchy of who has the right to live, who deserves not to suffer.
One of the joys of radio is creating your own network, tapping into activists around the world. Most people aren't interested in animal rights, so to forge ahead in the midst of family indifference or a larger public thinking that you're wacko, you end up really clinging to each other.
Folks, I have found myself a brand new honey.
We've had people write us from all over the world saying that they don't feel alone anymore.
We've got a system of loving, proud to say it's all our own.
There's a moment in a typical hunting scene where a wounded animal looks into the eyes of the hunter as it dies. How can you deny that it is alive as it looks at you? That it exists in the world with its own dreams and desires? You say to yourself, it's only an animal. This is the beginning of racism and genocide. We never truly believe it's only an animal, so we're haunted by it. The human subject is haunted by animals and by everything that has been excluded. By women. By people of different races, different sexual preferences. The civil rights movement, the gay and lesbian movements, animal rights struggles, and feminism all are reshaping what it means to be human.
It's really difficult, I think, in a context like this to express who Mark was. And I was mentioning this to Kristen that Mark was a presence, and it's really difficult to describe a presence in words. Like, he made you feel good, and he made you feel, it was like being around like some kind of radiator that was just like warm and kind. And I felt like if anybody met Mark, and I think it was kind of this unstated thing that for people who knew him, that we all knew that he was probably one of the best people that we'd ever met, if not the best person. And you just knew, talking to him. Like, he's really somebody who cared. And we're talking about animals, but it was everybody. Like, he cares.
This has become my cabinet. This is for the radio show, and this is a lot of files which I use to archive and to keep updated on locally and nationally and blah blah blah.
Hi, my name is Kristen Dunyan, and I'm a friend of Mark's. I met Mark in the mid-90s at Who's Emma, which was a radical bookstore and punk rock music store in Kensington Market. It was kind of an anarchist collective run thing, and we were both volunteers there. Mark and I both worked at Trinity Square Cafe, which is a cafe and a catering business and a job training program for people who are living with mental health issues. I moved on to a new place called Habitat Services as a housing worker with people who are experiencing severe mental illness and living in boarding homes in Toronto. And Mark joined me there in 2007.
So why don't you talk about what you're doing, Mira?
I don't feel like I talked so much this week. I don't feel like talking about it. I'm making up Mark. It's about the only drag queen in it tonight, I think. They're very, it's a very open, open-minded and inclusive troupe. See, they have a wide variety. Is it? Okay, make sure you... Okay, go ahead, I'm trying to film the intro.
See you.
The tenants that Mark worked with, he connected with people who hadn't, in a couple of cases, left their room for years. Like, he didn't even speak the same language. One person in particular who just, he saw a chessboard in the guy's room and gestured to play. And they played every, I guess, three times a week. You know, every time Mark came to the house, the guy was sitting there with the chessboard set up. And he was trying to learn Vietnamese so he could speak with him and with other tenants in that particular house. They loved him. They were always like the boy on the bike, you know, and he would toss his scarf off and ride in, ride out. And they loved that about him, that carefree. He seemed so different from all the people that they would meet in that capacity. You know, people would ask, oh, that guy with the shaved head, that's your brother, right? And I thought, yeah, he is. He is my brother. We went to a drag king show at Buddy's, and Mira Soleil and I had a few drinks, and we thought, you know, we were encouraging. Il faut l'encourager, I think she said, but she's saying, oh, girl, but we can do so much better. And we picked the song Two Ladies. Mira forced Mark to be in it. He didn't want to, but he went along with it. I've since learned that he had sort of more of a penchant for dramatic flair than he admitted at that time. And we rehearsed, we were bruised with rehearsing. We tried to get the dance steps just right, but I wasn't tall enough, and I was playing, you know, the male character, the MC, and they were going to be the two ladies. I think about the last time I saw Mark. It was at work, and we were in our cubicle. it felt so homey, and it was so hard to go back. It's so hard to be there sometimes still, but let's see, I don't get headaches. I had Advil. I had Advil out on my desk, and I don't know why. I don't take it very often. Maybe I had cramps or something. I wasn't in a good state. I was stressed with some
stuff with working on a book and publishing, and I was really under the gun. I felt very stressed all of April. And I remember saying to him, I don't think I can get through this month, you know, and he was like, I know, tell me about it, you know, at times. I say that because I feel like if I hadn't been so distracted with these other things, I might have been looking at him more closely, and I might have been open to, you know, I might have been more perceptive. I don't know if that would have been the case. But he came in and he was like happy-go-lucky as usual, and he was like, oh, Advil, do you mind if I take some? And I said, well, actually, it's funny you say that. We had this workshop recently. It was like a workplace safety and health, I don't know, this workshop. But one of the things that the instructor said was that, you know, you're not allowed to actually hand these kinds of pills to your coworker. If you're friends and you give them an Advil outside of work or a Tylenol or whatever, that's fine. You know, you can do that. But if you do that in your workplace or during work hours and in your workplace, and something happens to that person, you're liable. And it's like these strange bureaucratic rules. So we thought that was so hilarious, but it really stuck out. And so here he was asking me for these things. I was like, how funny that I now know that I can no longer hand you this. We could step outside the parking lot and I can give you, you know, this contraband over-the-counter medication. And I kept saying, no, I can't. I'm not supposed to. And he was like, why? Why? And I said, well, some people have some, you know, have you taken it before and stuff? And, you know, some people have really adverse reactions, I guess. And he's like what? I'm like, what? And I said, well, like, they die. Like, sometimes people die when they take this. And he was like, ugh. You know, he had his foot up in the air and his hand. He's like, I'm not going to die. And he said, I'm not going to die. And I'm used to way stronger than that. I didn't know what that meant. And he the reason he wanted is because his shoulder really hurt. And I never even found out why it hurt. Like, why? Like, how do you hurt your shoulder? And I think I just I asked him and he didn't say anything. And I just filled in the blanks. He's like, oh, from your job, you were probably lifting people and carrying people and stuff, right? He was like, he didn't say. And then I was trying to show him a yoga position where you lay on the floor and you put your knee over and it's supposed to help your back. And I was trying to, I showed him and then he did it. And I was pushing his knee. I wasn't even pushing it. I was guiding it. And he yelled out. And this is like, this is a man who could walk through a blizzard in sneakers and a windbreaker and not make a comment. He seemed impervious to physical discomfort. So I knew he was in a lot of pain. I knew he was quite injured. And I was like, I don't think this is going to help you if you're in that much pain. And I couldn't understand why he was that hurt. But anyways, he took a couple. And I said, please don't die on me. And he started laughing. And then he was pretending to die, like he was flopping onto his desk and laughing and laughing. And we were laughing. It was funny, right? But it wasn't. And I stopped laughing and I felt very awful. Like, I just felt like this is spooky. Like, this is not superstitious, I felt. And I said, Mark, it's not funny. Stop laughing, it's not funny. And I don't know what possessed me, because I'm not a very, you know, I'm not a very sharing person, but I said to him, if you died, I don't know what I would do. I said, if you weren't here on this planet, I wouldn't want to be here either. It wouldn't, I didn't say it wouldn't be worth it, but I just said, I wouldn't want to be here if you weren't. And I remember I didn't even look at him when I said that. Intimacy issues, whatever. And I did look at him after, and he was smiling, and he said, oh, that's so sweet. Oh, thanks. You know, and that characteristic thing, and I'm always, I don't know, I'm not, he wasn't flitting around all the time, but he just had a few gestures that he made, quintessential Mark. And it was like, he didn't have to say anything, he could just do that thing and everything would be okay, but I felt quite morose. And, you know, off he went, and I knew, he said, I'll see you tomorrow, we'll have coffee, and I said, no, I'm calling in sick tomorrow. I have to finish my book. I won't see you Tuesday, I'll see you Wednesday. And he goes, oh no, I'm taking Wednesday off. I said, okay, Thursday, I'll come early, we'll have coffee. And it was like, I was so excited to see him, and I know this sounds like I'm making it up, but I really had a sense of dread. I felt anxious. I felt anxious until I saw him again. Probably because I had felt uncomfortable about the joke. I guess. I don't know. I can't explain it otherwise. And I didn't get to see him again. I came to work early Thursday. I was excited to see him, and I brought like vegan cream for the coffee and stuff, and food, snacks, and I was there. I never used to go early, but everybody was in a flap because he wasn't there. He was supposed to be there for some appointment. And I guess there's more, but that's enough. He wasn't there.
When I speak with his friends, we can't stop him from dying again and again. Mark and I grew up in the same town. We went to the same high school. But we didn't meet until they took the yellow brick road and turned it into a house, where Mark worked as my editor for 6 years. Even during snowstorms, he would ride his bicycle over after working at his real jobs with the handicapped, the psychiatric survivors. We took pictures already made and recycled them to tell new stories, so they could keep our secrets company. When I think of the word, when I think of the machine of community, I think about Mark. I think of someone who was so very close and so very far away at the same time. He rushed off after each session, working so hard, I wondered what he was running away from.
Victim, the children, who are victims of war. Reading the ceiling back here. Date, Friday.
He had done something with his talking, taken it into some personal laboratory and recreated it one word at a time.
The gymnast.
Everything that came out of his mouth was sunshine, so even and smooth. He had given his words a second childhood, a second chance. I never heard him worry or complain, and the prayer he passed between us was always, "No problem." We worked together for 6 years, making mostly biographies, as it turned out, though there was never a plan. I don't think we believed in plans.
Sometimes nice to take a wrong turn.
He was a large man with a crooked beak of a nose and soft brown eyes that asked to be hurt over and over. I wasn't able to see then the way his lightness was also a way of erasing every step, as if he were walking backwards with a broom, sweeping away the traces. Now you see me. Now you don't.
I am Lorena Elke. Mark was my friend. The animal rights work and rescue work and being vegan and being politically vegan, it's part of my being a witch. And understanding that we're connected to cycles and nature and animals. And because of that, I can't partake in the slaughter or any of the way that animals are used as commodities. It was winter. And he built these shelters for all of these homeless cats in the Bleecker Co-op. He was, you know, feeding them and going to each one and checking inside. And his mannerisms when he was working with the ferals, he was just so graceful and in tune with the fear of the ferals. Like, he knew how to maneuver around them. He knew how to be gentle. He knew how to love them from afar. Even amidst all of his crazy working schedule, he ran into some ferals that near Cherry Beach, and he was going out every night or every day to feed them too. It just didn't stop for him. And I understand that, because with the rescue work I've done, for me it just couldn't stop, and so that's why I ended up with so many cats. And you know, I adopted the throwaways, the ones that people didn't want mostly. And that was like Mark.
Is it good?
And then he tended to not only their own tribe of animals, but the homeless animals. Like, how in the world did he have that energy? At what cost?
Well, I think we took the wrong route.
Oh, no.
It's okay. I think it's going to happen.
It's not coming.
I can tell you when. I just had one come in. Oh, here. Okay.
So Mark started up a chapter of Shack here in Toronto. I forget how many years ago that was. It must have been 4 or 5 years ago. And it stands for Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty. And Huntington was a lab in the UK that basically was breeding animals, like predominantly beagles, to be used for experimentation and research. Whether it's within the pharmaceutical area or commercial area. So there was a whole movement that started in the UK and then went to the US and then came to Canada, basically, this organization, to really draw attention to what this particular company was doing. And Mark organized the first chapter of it here in Toronto and organized, you know, protests and demonstrations outside of companies who were buying these animals to use in experimentation.
The reason we're standing here at this location today is that we want to tell the company Sumitomo, which is on the 28th floor of this building, that we are fed up with their support of Huntington Life Sciences. Thousands of animals will be saved yearly once Huntington Life Sciences closes down.
Said Mark is going to learn Czech properly.
Yeah, he's. Yeah. She said he's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good, and her husband likes him too. You know, I just wish Mark was a little bit more neater, you know, like, because he has spots on his clothes. And I said to her when he was young, before he lost his hair, before he went to New Zealand, how beautiful his hair was. You should see him then. You wouldn't believe it, how healthy, thick his hair was.
And what did she say? It.
Yeah, she said, yeah, that's different. Because
did she say he's dirty?
No.
No.
No, no, no. I was saying him about the hair.
Oh.
How he'd changed it. Now he doesn't have any hair because he shaves it. But I said to her, you wouldn't believe it, how much hair he had. But I said he went to New Zealand and he met these girls and they, you know, they bleached his hair and everything.
Uh-huh.
That was damaged. They damaged his hair. What do you think? Is it possible?
No. No.
It was because he went through depression.
That the hair changed? That he started to lose it?
I know, but it must have been something.
No.
See,
I think he's just...
do you remember he has these marks on his skin?
Yeah, he was depressed and everything, but that doesn't make you lose your hair.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Where's Alice?
I knew that Mark had moods. I knew that he carried something in him. I knew that he had wounds from his childhood. I knew about his uncle that committed suicide because they named one of their cats after him. And I was told the story at that time. I think was it Ladislav? Yeah.
What did he tell you about his uncle?
Briefly that he had committed suicide when he was young and that he was very connected to that uncle and that it had a really big effect on his life and that Mira said he kind of, you know, Mark reminded her of that uncle just apparently in his ways, or he was sort of a quiet man, gentleman too.
My morning shot to get me through a morning of camping.
Olga, come on, how have you taken it?
Espresso. Campfire style.
Tell us what happened with Olga. Did you have the camera on when she did that?
Excitedly rolled around on a cadaver.
She what?
Excitedly rolled around on a cadaver. And it was nice and rotten.
Wow. A cadaver of what?
A bird, a duck, I think.
What?
See, and if you look out there, there's more of them. You see? There's about three or four.
Where? Oh, what are they?
A wild, wonderful kingdom.
But Mark drank very little, so that was always weird. And then what happened is that I haven't dreamt since he died. I didn't want to either, so I was glad. I was not dreaming, but I did dream this time. Sometimes what would happen is that in the middle of the night, mm-hmm. he would just wake up. And we'd be like kissing, and we wouldn't know how it happened. Like we'd just be, all of a sudden become like aware that like we're just like, it's 4 a.m. and then we're super horny, like super in a super primitive way. And like we're just and we're just kissing and we don't know how it happened. Like it's almost as if like we were sleeping or having an erotic dream, both of us at the same time. And we thought we were dreaming, right? And then we're still waking up and we're kind of like so we'd start often having sex that way. So what happened at the first dream I had right now is that I just was I kind of dreamt that this was I dreamt that this was happening. And
how nice.
Yeah, I dreamt that this was happening. But then what was weird is that as it was happening, I was thinking, I kind of felt sad. And I was thinking oh my God, Mark, I dreamt that you had left me and you were no longer there. And da-da-da-da-da, that's so horrible because I always have this recurring dream that he would leave or he was no longer there. And then I would wake up and then he would be right beside me in bed. And I had this happening all the time. I got chills now. See, so for the whole time I was with him, 10 years, like every week, maybe 3-4 times a week, I would wake up in a sweat and I would be telling him, oh, I dreamt that you were no longer there. And I'd be every time so relieved that he would be beside me, recurring all the time, all the time, all the time, all the time. And then so I had the same thing happening there. But when I fucking woke up, I was like expecting him there because that's what used to happen, except that the fucking wasn't there. Ugh, fucking horrible, no? Okay.
Lásko prokletá. Za pár slov a vět vezmu kletbu zpět. Pamatuj, že ta kletba byla jen marná obrana. Kotlaný kmen, píseň ohraná.
Roztočí se zas.
Kotlaný kmen, roztočí se zas naše ruleta. Počkej do léta, to je její čas.
Lásko prokletá.
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 Lásko prokletá. Lásko prokletá. Za pár slov a věc vezmu kletbu zpět. Pamatuj, že ta kletba byla jen marná obrana. Píseň ohraná, vykotlaný kmen. Roztočí se zas naše ruleta. Počkej do léta, to je její čas. Lásko prokletá.
Lásko prokletá.
Lásko prokletá.
Next thing I know, as I'm opening my eyes, there's birds chirping and this bright light, from outside. And it's the spring also, so you can... There's a smell of the spring around. So then I just get out of bed, to make sure he's not late for work. And as I make a ride there and I'm going in the hallway upstairs, and I saw a fucking dog leash. And I just started to cry. And I started to say, I was screaming, no, no, no. And I just went down the stairs super fast.
But then as soon as I was in front of him, like, I started to talk to him. And that's, I think that somehow, like, I was convinced he was still there, that even though he might be dead, he could still listen to me. And I was telling him about the time you said you, because of all these nightmares I had about him leaving me and being insecure and everything, I was telling him, like, you said you'd never leave me, you said you'd never leave me. And I'm grabbing him at the same time, and he's fucking hanging, okay? Somehow I feel he's still there behind the eyes, even though the eyes are kind of, like, they're looking like this, and they're kind of... they're starting to die, they're funny, they're not normal, but I could still feel him there, so like I'm trying to get at him, but then there's another split, because I split in chunks at the time, another split of me that's saying, okay, we've got to lift him up, because he was hanging, so I can't leave my boyfriend hanging there, like even though he's there, I don't know, so this other part of me, like he, while I was talking, it starts to struggle with the body to pull him up, and then that's when I realized he, like, I always saw him as not a big guy, like as a tall, skinny eschalot, like green onion, a tall green onion, we used to laugh and call him that way. So what happened is that but then I realized he's very heavy, and you know, and he was very stiff, you know, he probably died hours earlier. Every time that I pushed, okay, it went every single, I don't know, like there might have been dozens of those, if not 100, until the ambulance and the police and everybody arrived. Every time I went like, you know, and it's like you do 7 in a row, I think, so. Every bit of dead air that came out of him, it put my whole soul into like a state of hope, only to like, to be right away thrown into like a state of total abandonment again, because the, you know, that's like, no, that's dead air. But then you continue. Maybe it's not, but no. You go through this cycle. It's like almost it becomes in slow motion. And then you pass from like from hope and he's alive to like, no, it can't be. He's dead. This is just dead air coming out of the stomach. I think that as soon as they walk in, I think they knew he was dead. I think the woman knew on the phone he was dead. But like, I'm there and like, I realize I'm the spouse. And then they don't want to say, ma'am, he's dead, get off there and go sit on the couch. You know, but me, I know that's what they're thinking at the same time, you know. So I get up and to leave the place to the guy. I go sit on the bench. But as I'm doing this, I know that the guy is just going on mark to do it. But it's just because he doesn't want to not do it, because he wants to give me some satisfaction of some ways that he tried or something. But so I'm sitting there and I know he's dead by then, like there's nothing that can be done, and like the guy just like goes 4 times on his stomach, and then there's nothing that happens, and that he doesn't even say anything like now he's dead to his colleague or anything. He just gets up like and then like 4 minutes later, then they talk about with each other and everything, and then 5 minutes later, like turns his head towards me and he says, so, ma'am, do you realize what's going on? He said it in a compassionate way, like he didn't sound like sarcastic like this. I'm not doing him well, but it's like I said, of course I know he's dead. And I started to cry again. And then I don't remember, like, I think everything after that's just like a blank. I remember I was upstairs and they were asking me questions about him, if there's been people in his family with suicide, if he was taking drugs, if he was depressed, and ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. And you answer a question, but then you're gone, you know, for a long time after that.
He never came first. He didn't break the record or find the cure. He was too busy helping others for that, staying in the background where he felt he belonged. How do you make a picture of the background? As these boys run towards the men that are waiting for them, in their old age, who in this hopeful scrum would declare themselves content with an ordinary life? an ordinary love affair, an ordinary kind of happiness. In the year after Mark died, his friend Andrew got this tattoo. And after 35 years, he moved out of the building he and Mark once lived in together. In the year after Mark died, Mira moved back to Quebec, and Mark's parents moved back to Burlington so they could be close to their remaining son, Paul, who got Mark's Rolling Stones records. Lauren and Carl moved to a new house where they continue to work for animal rights on their radio show. Lorena moved in with her girlfriend and her 13 cats. Kristen broke up with her girlfriend, and I started editing movies by myself. To create a picture, to leave a mark, to be marked by him. It seems he didn't quite succeed in becoming invisible, after all.